Hello, and welcome to UDL Research in 15 Minutes, where researchers share their findings about the implementation, the impact, and their introspective investigations of the UDL framework. I'm Louie Lord Nelson, UDL author and leader. Today, I'm talking with Sara Wilford, who is a senior lecturer and senior research fellow at the Center for Computing and Social Responsibility and a faculty of computing, engineering, and media at De Montfort University in Leicester, England. Today, Dr. Wilford and I are going to talk about research she reported in her article titled Responsible Research and Innovation, Using the Requirements Tool for Stakeholder Engagement in Developing a Universal Design for Learning Guidelines for Practice. Hello, Dr. Wilford, how are you?
Hello, I'm fine. Thank you very much. And thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. And first, can I call you Sara?
Please do.
Thank you very much. All right. So my first absolutely burning question is this. Your interests are in, I'm going to read this, computer ethics, privacy, surveillance, public policy, and e-government. And you have a background in public administration and management, as well as your PhD in computing ethics and public policy. How did you come to know about universal design for learning?
Yeah, it was, I guess it was sort of by accident in the first instance. My university had said that this made the decision that they were going to actually implement universal design for learning across the whole of the university for all students. And this piqued my interest. What is this universal design for learning? So I volunteered to be the champion, and I was successful in being the champion for my faculty. So I started to learn about what that actually meant and how it was involving learners at, basically knocking down barriers. And I thought that was a fantastic way for learners to grow and develop. So that's how I started into it.
That's fabulous. So then I also understand, let me back up for a second. Within this article, you are using responsible research and innovation as an approach. Yeah. I'd never heard of that specific approach to research before. So I'm already in love with it. But I think I'm going to fall further in love with it because I'm going to ask you to give a description of that in a way that our researcher community can understand.
Yeah, I'll be happy to. So responsible research and innovation basically says what we need to do is if we're going to do innovation, we're going to do research, we're going to create new things, new artifacts for humans to use, then what we don't want to be doing is bolting on everything at the end. So we go, oh, we'll make this thing, it's a blue sky thing, we'll just do it. Don't worry about the consequences. And then, we'll bolt on some security or we'll tweak the algorithm or something like that afterwards if there's a problem. Now, what responsible research and innovation says is, no, let's back up. Let's say we build the idea of responsibility, taking responsibility, not just for what you do, but the impact of that technology on the current period and future generations. And we go, okay, let's build it in from the design. Let's build it in from the very beginning at the concept stage. So the idea of building in responsibility at the concept stage is the whole pillar, if you like, of responsible research and innovation. And it brings in all sorts of concepts like ethics and self-determination, co-creation, all those different concepts that build around the idea of responsible research and innovation. And just key point, it does require action. So this is not something you can go, oh, what a lovely concept. No, you go, okay, how are we going to build this actually into the design? So it's like privacy by design, ethics by design, all those different ideas brought into one concept that you would take, you'd basically, that would be your methodology, that would be your methodological approach to the research that you do. So that's very much in a nutshell.
So is this something that came out of the computing world? Did it come out of social sciences? Do you know?
No, it actually didn't. It was originally responsible innovation with regards to mechanical engineering. This concept, the idea was that there were things that were being built, that were being made, that weren't actually sustainable. You know, the whole idea of a built-in obsolescence. with things, that type of thing. And it was realized that this was not sustainable. And so it was originally thought of in practical, in a practical sense. But then it developed. It was actually taken on by the European Commission in their Horizon 2020 research series. It was one of the key pillars for the for all the projects. So all of the projects that were done under the Horizon 2020 program all had to have an element of responsible research and innovation. So it focuses your mind on, you know, not just doing something because you can, but doing something, you know, with an eye to the future, an eye to that sort of approach, if you like, the future generations and how it's going to impact them. Had we been using something like responsible research and innovation during the development of YouTube or Facebook, we probably would not be seeing the problems that they're now encountering, where their algorithms are designed such that they are actually causing further problems that they hadn't anticipated. Right. Actually, could have anticipated this had you considered those issues at the design stage. It's been going on quite a while. I would say at least 10 to 15 years in the UK and Europe, but I think in the US it's only just starting to show itself a little.
It's this brilliant overlap of, you know, coming from mechanical engineering, but it's got this incredible social side to it. That brings in that thoughtful design. And so, oh my gosh, it's so obvious why you saw this connection with universal design for learning, because of course, inherent to that framework is that you're doing this work up front. You're preparing for that access. You're creating and establishing that within your design. But all right, so I don't want to steal that thunder, because
of course, that's great. I'm really happy that you can see the point. I mean, that is being the point. We do have to. I think in the past, the idea of creating something just because you could was the be all and end all, and then it was like, oh, how do we get that to market, and how do we take that further, and then take it into a business and start earning lots of money. And there wasn't really the thought about the impact. So, for example, I'm introducing ethical thoughts, and then again, this is to do with responsible research and innovation within our MEC-ENG, we call them, mechanical engineering students, who, when their final project, create a thing. So they design a car or something similar. So what we'll do, we're not going, thinking about privacy and data so much with these guys. We're thinking, okay, where are you sourcing your materials? What are you going to do about those materials when that vehicle is no longer working, and do you need to, can you recycle it? Are you going to be using materials that are sustainable? And so responsible research and innovation is really looking anywhere that you're going to do an innovation and saying, take a step back, have a look about the future. So it can be across any sort of field, which is one of the wonderful things about it. So of course, when I became UDL champion, and I started thinking about the whole concept of breaking down barriers for students, and I realized that what was happening in my university was that they were sending all this stuff from on high. You know, everything was coming from on high. Here's a set of guidelines. There's another set of checklists. And I was thinking, how can we implement UDL effectively if we are not actually practicing what we preach with the staff? How can the staff, who have got lots of different learning styles, lots of different approaches, lots of different needs, if we want them to be effective at implementing UDL for their students, then we need to take that responsible and UDL approach to the creation of the guidelines and everything else for them. So this is how I ended up bringing the two together, because to me it seemed quite obvious.
Yeah, so I'd love, so first of all, I am going to say that this whole RRI approach is like an answer to my prayers since I've been in like a middle schooler. I mean, these are the kind of things I've been thinking about. If I hadn't been in education, I was going down the pathway of mechanical engineering. So maybe that's why this is all coming together for me. Yeah. I mean, this is just, oh my gosh. But I would love it if you would go into more detail about how you use the RRI approach to bring UDL to the faculty. their demand for it.
Okay. So as I said, we received all these documents and things like that. And we were basically told, right, okay, guys, off you go, use these documents, go and implement UDL. So I thought, no, this is the entirely wrong approach. And prior to the to taking on this role, I'd been involved, I was actually leading on a project. It's a EU project. It was called Governance of Responsible Research and Innovation. And as part of that, I had to create a tool, which was the idea being that if you're going to create a set of guidelines for someone or for a group or something like that, what you need to do is not just go, hey, here's the guidelines, give us some feedback. No, you say, excuse me, what would you think would be an effective form of guidelines? How would you like that to look? What would you think that would be useful to have that in there? What would you think would not be useful? So this co-creation approach, and I thought, this is interesting. We could do this within these guidelines that have been created for UDL. So I utilized the tool. I got obviously got everybody together in the faculty, and we had this ongoing working group whereby I said, okay, we've been given this stuff, but I want to throw that out. We can use it as a resource, but I don't want that to be the guiding principle. The guiding principle is, this is UDL as we're seeing it. Here is the tool for actually considering what you need in order to be able to implement UDL. And let's work together to create the guidelines and everything else that would enable us to effectively implement UDL within the faculty. So this is basically what happened. It was done over a period of around about 3 months with lots of different iterations. And each iteration was obviously, we had further meetings, further discussions, further changes that were made until everybody was going, this makes sense. And I would add that because it's a university faculty, so we have different schools, even though it's all technology, you know, we have one of media, we have one of engineering, we have another one of computing. So each of them have their own distinct flavor, if you like. So the beauty of using the tool was that for each of these different schools that I was going into, we were able to tweak and adjust the guidelines and everything else and create them specific to their field. So it was directly relevant to what they wanted to deliver and the experiences that they expected their students to have and so on. So each of the sets of guidelines were very specific to what they directly wanted. So it was a really satisfying experience, I have to say. And I can say that De Montfort University has implemented UDL across its entire university, and it's been embedded now for 4 years. It's now just part of what we do. And all the documentation, you know, you have so much documentation to do as an academic to do with teaching. And these are embedded within all the documentation. It's just something that we do automatically. It's on all the forms. What have you done towards UDL? How have you developed your module materials for UDL? These are questions that are asked continually of staff to make them reflect and think about how we embrace their idea of leveling that playing field. So yeah, it was a very positive experience, I have to say.
Yeah, so I'm thinking of the guidelines themselves. So I'm thinking you really hung out up there in the recruiting interest area, right? You were just tapping into and making sure that this information about UDL was coming to people in a way that fit with them. It fit with what their experiences were as educators, what they were teaching, their content. And then I'm thinking about the sustaining effort and persistence. Well, it's because it's a part of your system now and part of that recording or reporting, then that's in there. And I'm going through all the guidelines and going, you guys are just hitting everything. That's wonderful.
They really are. I mean, that is another thing, you see, because the RRI tool, I'd actually used it previously in a different context. And so I knew it worked. And the great thing is that by using the tool, people had that buy-in. Mm-hmm. So they felt like they were part of the development. So there was no persuading needed because they would have then been dissuaded of the stuff that they had created. So it was so much easier then to get the staff to fully embrace it because they felt that they were involved in its entire creation. And so that was also a very important part of the success of the project.
So if listeners want to learn more about this approach, the RRI approach, where would you send them? What would you recommend that they read, or website, or anything like that?
Okay, so we have, if you want to see some of the projects that my particular research group, the Center for Computing and Social Responsibility, doing, and we're still doing responsible research innovation research, we've got quite a few projects on the go, then you can go directly to our website, which you would find by putting Center for Computing and Social Responsibility into Google. You'll find it there. But there's also an affiliate with Oxford University that we have, which is it's called Orbit. And it is a commercial training opportunity for people to learn responsible research innovation, and to learn that and implement that within organisations in business and industry. So, because one of the things about RRI, because it's easier to say, is that it's not purely an academic thing. It's actually an applied, practical approach. So we have lots of opportunities for training and all that sort of thing through the Orbit, site. We have fully trained up trainers and people like that to help businesses and industry to implement responsible research and innovation. And then, of course, if you put responsible research and innovation, or RRI, into Google Scholar, you will find an incredibly large amount of academic papers all about this topic, because it has been quite a big thing for well over 10 years in Europe, and we're just starting to push the feelers out into other areas. Some of my colleagues are doing responsible research and innovation work in the Global South, so we have quite a lot of African colleagues, people from Nigeria, South Africa, Malawi, places like that, who are actually also embracing responsible research and innovation within their faculties and within their business. So it is an expansive approach. But yeah, so there's a lot of resource out there that you can go to.
Well, this has been a fabulous conversation, Sarah. Thank you so much. And thanks for sharing those resources. But I really appreciate your time. I reached out to you out of the blue, and you still said, okay, I'll give this a try. So thank you so much.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm honored to be a part of it. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So for those listening to this podcast, you can find supplemental materials like a recorded video of this interview with closed captioning and a transcript at my website, which is theudlapproach.com/podcasts. The citation for the article we discussed, as well as the other references that we discussed, can be found in the video representation of this podcast on my UDL Research in 15 Minutes YouTube channel. And finally, if you are a UDL researcher or know of UDL research you'd like to hear about, contact me through my website, which is theudlapproach.com. I'd love to hear from you. And thanks to everyone for your work in revolutionizing education through UDL and making it our goal to develop expert learners.